My journey certainly was through the pro-life movement, and I became a Catholic through my involvement in anti-abortion campaigns at university. I often tell people in the pro-life movement who are Catholic, you are pro-life because you are Catholic. Pro-life is a logical extension of your Catholicism. But I found the other entry point. I became Catholic because I was pro-life first. So to take you back to the beginning, I came from a non-Catholic background. My mother was born in Poland, but to a Jewish and agnostic sort of household. And my father has never been a Catholic. So I wasn't raised in a Catholic household. But in 1996, by the grace of God and through various relationships my mother had garnered over the years, she actually entered the Catholic Church. So 1996, this is grade 6, I would have been 12 years old. My mother converts to Catholicism basically in secret. The rest of the family didn't know, and we certainly weren't fully aware that my mother had made this life-changing decision. And being a Polish woman, she was quite devoted to Pope John Paul II during that stage, and Sister Faustina and the Divine Mercy devotion. So my mother became this catechumen and then a Catholic in secret while I was in grade 6. And soon after that, gave birth to my two sisters, Maya and Emily. And that was at the time I was starting high school, and the whole thing fascinated me because I was the eldest son and I was getting these younger sisters, and all of a sudden the house was full of laughter and crying and changing nappies, my father losing sleep and doing night feeds, and I was seeing the whole process of the beginnings of human life during those formative teenage years when very many of us are making bad life decisions. I was actually seeing the positive side of openness to life and the positive side of additions to the family in the birth of my younger sisters. So by the time I got to uni, I had a bit of an appreciation for not only newborn human life, but unborn human life, because at the time when my mother was pregnant, she was coming home and showing us the ultrasound videos, and she'd named the children in the womb. Maya was named in the womb after 3 or 4 months, and Emily, similar to that. So being the eldest son and going off to uni, I had this background where my mum had become a Catholic. I'd had two new surprise additions to the family in younger sisters, and my head was still reeling, in a sense, from this experience of seeing the ultrasound videos and naming my sisters in the womb and developing a relationship with them before they were even born, which held me in good stead for university. Because on campus I got involved in the university politics, and as many people are aware, the modern day university is a veritable gaggle of different political ideologies and people trying to sell you their various visions for humanity, whether it be the Marxists or the Christian Union students, the complete nihilists, and all the professors giving their bent on modern society and their ideologies. So it's a real melting pot of different views, and people are making decisions about what kind of profession they're going to live in the world, but also, I guess, forming their own political thoughts and religious affiliations at university. It's a time when many people convert, obviously not to religion so much these days, but to a political ideology, whether it be Marxism or liberalism or complete nihilism in many cases. So at university, in this melting pot of different ideas and philosophies, I was asking the same questions that all university students were asking themselves. What do I want to be when I grow up? How do I want to define my life? Do I want a family? What's the next 10 years of my life going to look like? I was asking all the same questions that everybody asks when they go off to university and they've separated themselves from their parents for the very first time. And the turning point really came in my second year of university when I was walking around campus daydreaming as usual, trying to formulate excuses for one of my assignments being late, I'm sure, or something like that. And I was looking at the bollards, which are these poster displays at the university. Melbourne University is famous for its bollards with the paper mache of different posters for Marxism lectures and the Young Liberal Society and all the different groups on university place their advertisements on these bollards. And the most prominent one at this stage, I think it was my first semester, second year at uni, was an abortion talk given by the Socialist Alliance. Women's Right to Choose, come and hear the Women's Collective and the Socialist Alliance talk about the fight for reproductive rights, your right to abortion, free abortion on demand, all these slogans on the poster. And it piqued my interest because, being a young man interested not only in politics but especially the conservative side of politics, because that was the way I was inclined, I saw this socialist meeting and thought, I'm going to go in there and stir up some trouble. I didn't especially have strong views on abortion. I hadn't really thought about it very much. But the fact that it said this was being put on by the Women's Collective and the Marxist group on campus, I thought, yeah, I'll go and stir up some trouble there. So I turned up and sat in the back and kept a low profile for most of the meeting. And three or four speakers got up and spoke about their reasons for being pro-choice or pro-abortion. There was a female lecturer from the gender department, a completely useless institution within a university they have these days called the gender studies department, where young women are taught to be men haters. It's always interesting listening to one of their professors talking. And then there was a young student who got up and talked about her abortion and how it had liberated her and what a wonderful experience it was, which was quite confronting. And there was question and answer time. And what I couldn't get over wasn't so much that these people were pro-choice, but I was actually seeing what I would call the pro-abortion movement. Now, pro-choice is a term they like to use, but what was happening at that meeting was a celebration of abortion, the raising of abortion almost to the level of a sacrament for these feminists. And it offended my sensibilities, not as a religious person, but as an older brother, because as I've just explained, when my sisters were born as a teenager, Mum brought home the ultrasounds and I'd named my sisters in the womb. And I was thinking over this as these Marxists and these feminists and these pro-aborts were standing up, just dismissing the fetus, making jokes about the unborn child, really quite tasteless ones. And it was so wicked and so vile and so over the top. It offended my sensibilities as an older brother and as a human being, not from any religious perspective. And I remember that night, that very night, after coming home from that pro-abortion conference at university on campus, I looked up on the internet anti-abortion. Because I thought, if those guys are pro-abortion, then I want to get involved in the anti-abortion movement, because what they were saying was repugnant to me. And through searching Google and looking up the various groups in Australia, I made contact with Right to Life Australia in Victoria and said, I'm a university student, I want to set up a pro-life group on campus, because what I've just seen has impelled me to get involved in the pro-life movement. We need people speaking against this deep green, wicked, antenatal ideology that's being preached on campus by these students, and a lot of people are being misled into believing that the unborn child is just a dispensable piece of tissue. So I rang up Right to Life and I got involved and went to their committee meetings, started to stuff the envelopes and participate in the direct mail campaigns, that rite of passage that all us pro-lifers go through when we join a pro-life organisation. And I got involved. I got my hands dirty. I stacked chairs for meetings. I helped formulate plans to have life weeks on my university campus and really got, you know, knee deep in the pro-life movement. But it was purely at that point, as an older brother and as a human being and as a political person, I was really approaching the issue from a secular approach, which meant that I didn't have the strong foundations that people of faith have, where the whole narrative explains the reasons why we're anti-abortion. I was anti-abortion then, but I wasn't pro-life. And there is a distinction. I had this revulsion against the idea of abortion, but I couldn't adequately explain, like a person of faith could, the whole edifice of the culture of life, the reasons why we're anti-abortion, the reasons why marriage is exalted, the reason why living in a right relationship with a woman exclusively for the rest of your life in marriage is the way to bring children to the world. I couldn't have explained any of that. I was just anti-abortion at that stage. And then by a quirk of fate, which I can only describe as grace touching my life at that moment, I came into contact with the Helpers of God's Precious Infants. There was a member of the Helpers of God's Precious Infants on the Right to Life committee, and he'd invited me to speak in an abortion clinic about my entry into the pro-life movement. So I went down to this abortion clinic, and this is about 5.5 years ago. For the first time, I stood at that coalface of evil, that modern-day Calvary, as Monsignor Riley calls it, the abortion clinic. So I'd come into the pro-life movement. I had a vague notion of what actually happened during an abortion, but I was actually going to the place where they were performing them for the first time. And when I turned up, this was that truly life-changing moment, that moment of conversion. The whole process was kick-started, my journey to the Catholic faith, when I turned up at this abortion clinic in St. Kilda. The Helpers of God's Precious Infants had erected their shrine to Our Lady of Guadalupe on the side of the street, a huge image of Our Lady. And there were people praying the rosary, going through their beads and the decades. And the whole thing had a truly transformative effect on me, because I was seeing what motivated other people to be pro-life, and it was completely different to me. I was there because my sisters were born and because I was a human being and I was revulsed by the idea of abortion. And they were there partly because of that, but they were there for a deeper reason. They were praying, they were on their knees, they had recourse to the beautiful image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I was immediately drawn to that particular image, and I stood next to that image as I delivered my remarks at the end of the vigil about being a young person at university involved in the pro-life movement. So there I was, standing next to Our Lady of Guadalupe, confessing my pro-life convictions, and Our Lady of Guadalupe is working on me in the other direction from heaven. I'm sure she's interceding for me, saying this young man could give a lot to the church through the pro-life movement if he does become a Catholic. And I'm convinced that Our Lady of Guadalupe was praying particularly for me at that moment when I stepped out in faith, went to the abortion clinic, and gave this address to all the people there. At the end of the vigil, another young Catholic invited me to go on a retreat, which was to be held in the far east of Victoria, Marlow, a place near Sale. And because I had exams coming up in a couple of weeks, I thought I'd take this young lady up on the offer to go to this retreat. I had no idea it would be a religious retreat. In my head, it was going to be at a country property, and I'd have time and space to study and reflect, write a few articles for my pro-life university apostolate, and to also study for my exams, which were coming up. So this idea of a country retreat was quite convenient. And I thought, yeah, I'll take this young lady up on the offer. I'll go out to the retreat center, spend some time in nature, reflect and study, and take that opportunity. I was very grateful to be given that. I was driven there by an older couple, the Grants, Richard and Beverly Grant. It turns out, now that I'm working at Family Life International, I later realized that Richard Grant was the Melbourne coordinator for Family Life International. So I'm being driven to this retreat by somebody firmly ensconced in the Catholic pro-life movement. And on the way down to the retreat house, they started praying the rosary, and they asked me to join in. And it was at that point I realized that in going to the helper's vigil, where I spoke outside the abortion clinic, and in coming to this retreat, Richard and Beverly had actually assumed I was already a Catholic. Yet I was sitting in the passenger seat, nothing of the sort. I wasn't a Catholic at all. I hadn't even really considered becoming a Catholic at that point. And so they started the rosary, and I basically bluffed my way through it. I said, oh, Richard, yeah, why don't you lead it? And he's like, oh, would you like to lead in mysteries? Oh, it's okay. I find it easier to pray if somebody else is leading it. I'm making this up as I go along. So Richard was saying, you know, the first half of the Hail Mary, and I would get into the second half of the Hail Mary. He would say the Fatima prayer, which I didn't know, and the Glory Bees were pretty easy to remember, so I participated in those. So I prayed this rosary out on the way to the retreat house in the best way I could, and I think by that stage Richard and Beverly might have been a little bit suspicious that I wasn't a Catholic, because I wasn't doing a very good job of remembering the prayers if I was one. But we got to the retreat house in one piece, and I was thinking to myself, boy, if this is going to be a Catholic retreat, when these people find out I'm basically a quasi-Protestant with no real faith at all, I might not make it back from this retreat house. I didn't know much about Catholics, and I was worried that, you know, if they found out I was a Protestant, then a shovel and a bag of lime later, I might be buried out in the forest and never make my way back again. So I was a little bit worried about that. I thought, how am I going to approach this? So I resolved, whether or not it was a wise idea, to basically spend the week impersonating a Catholic, because I was worried about, you know, going on the missing persons list as a young Protestant who found himself at this Catholic camp. And, you know, I thought, if a Jesuit priest on this retreat finds out who I really am, then I'm not going to make it back to Melbourne. So I resolved to impersonate a Catholic for the entire week of the retreat. So I went to the masses, knelt during adoration, participated in all the rosaries and the devotions. And God will work upon a soul, no matter at which point in the spiritual life they're at, and in my case, at a very rudimentary level. I was participating in the external devotions of the church without really understanding them, kneeling before the Blessed Sacrament in adoration, trying to fiddle through the rosary beads, doing my best to impersonate, you know, a real papist. And by the end of the week, I was enjoying the role so much, I was actually starting to think to myself, it makes sense as a pro-lifer and as somebody who is now going to be involved in this community to share the same faith that these other pro-lifers have. It just made sense to me. It was very logical. And the real clincher was the priest who was running the retreat, Father Des Byrne, a very orthodox, holy, elderly priest who's still alive in the Archdiocese of Melbourne, who I'm eternally grateful for. The real clincher was when he preached on the truth and the beauty and the goodness of the real presence of the Blessed Sacrament. And in that chapel, in the middle of the country, where at the start of the week I was worried about going missing and being kidnapped by these Catholics who I didn't know much about. By the end of the week, I knew the most important thing there is to know about Catholicism, that they have the exclusive possession of the teaching power handed on to them by Jesus Christ through the apostles and continuing through the bishops to this day, and the source and summit of Christian life, the Blessed Sacrament, God himself in the Eucharist. I knelt before, saw him, recognized him. Our Lord, through a moment of grace, told me it was him there. And by the end of the retreat, at the end of those 5 days, I had resolved to become a Catholic. So, a few weeks later, to fast forward, I was receiving my instructions from my local parish priest back in Melbourne. I told him I wanted to become a Catholic. And 5 years ago, easy to remember because we've just had the 5th anniversary of Pope Benedict XVI, on the Easter Vigil, during the last week of Pope John Paul II's life, I was received into the Catholic Church by my local parish priest at Sacred Heart Parish in Melbourne. And there's been no turning back since that point, because I've realised that I really do owe my Catholicism and finding the truth to the pro-life movement. I dedicated my Christian life at that confirmation ceremony and during my conversion to the pro-life movement. My prayer throughout those proceedings, when I had the chrism oil put on my forehead and the priest said the words of confirmation over me, and the whole congregation clapped and I was received into the church, into the loving arms of Holy Mother Church. My prayer that day was, Lord, let me never forget that it was the pro-life movement that brought me to this place today, that brought me to a recognition of the truth, that brought me into the loving arms of my mother, the church. So ever since that time, 5 years ago, I have resolved to always remain involved in the pro-life movement, whether professionally or voluntarily. I don't think I'll ever be too far from the pro-life movement, because that is the reason I became a Catholic. I am Catholic because I was pro-life, and now I'm truly pro-life because I'm Catholic. So that was the story. That's a very condensed version. There were lots of moments of grace in between, but that is how I became a Catholic.